Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Every Voice with Terrence McKnight on WQXR. It's a radio special that looks at the representations of blackness in Mozart's opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio. Growing up, I played two instruments, trumpet and piano. And both instruments eventually led me towards the experience of classical music, going to the concert hall. But for many of those years, I avoided opera. Maybe that's true for you, too. Well, these days, what I've come to enjoy about opera, aside from the music, is how opera is a window into the past, but it's also reflective. It allows us to see modern society through the lens of yesterday. The good, the bad, and the other.
The abduction.
Abduction
from the Seraglio.
Abduction from the Seraglio.
Abduction from the Seraglio premiered in the summer of 1782, and Mozart was having the time of his life. He'd recently gotten married, left his hometown of Salzburg for the capital city of Vienna. He struck out on his own, became a freelance composer with his heart set on writing operas. And in Vienna, he became a Freemason and landed financial support from the big boss, the Holy Roman Emperor, Joseph II, who was a big fan of opera and of Mozart. So he commissioned an opera from Mozart. Now, the subject of this commission wasn't exactly what Mozart had in mind when he moved to Vienna, but he needed the coins. So in keeping with the emperor's wishes, Mozart composed a rescue opera in German.
Sind mir ganz bekannt,
Ganz bekannt, sind wir ganz bekannt. Mit so hinterliegen, müsst ihr früh aufstehen, müsst ihr früh aufstehen. Ich hab auch Verstand. Ich hab auch Verstand. Solche Hiegen auf der Nacht. Till und Nacht mit meinem Affen. Mag ich vor dem Teufel nicht, mag ich vor dem Teufel nicht, mag ich vor dem Teufel nicht, denn ihr ganzes Tun und Lassen ist uns auf den Dienst zu passen, uns auf den Dienst zu passen. Doch mich trügt ein solch Gesicht, doch mich trügt kein solch Gesicht.
5 years before moving to Vienna, Mozart spent his summer in Paris, where he had gone looking for employment. He didn't find the job of his dreams, but he did make a significant contact. Joseph Boulogne was an important musical figure in France. He was an associate of Marie Antoinette. Well, Joseph Boulogne was a biracial composer whose father was a French aristocrat, and he was afforded the freedom of education with limited social mobility. Nonetheless, he and Mozart shared a residence in Paris in the summer of 78, and I imagine they talked more than music. When Mozart went back to Vienna, he began working on an opera called Zaid. It's what he took with him when he went to Vienna. Can you guess what that opera was about?
It is about a slave revolt.
A slave revolt? Slavery was the law of the land in some places. It was an economic engine for many places. It was the way of the world. And Mozart wants to depict abolitionist freedom, a slave revolt on stage.
Every one of Mozart's operas is liberatory. Zaid was his abolitionist opera. And it is about a slave revolt. And he is very specific about it.
Theater and opera director Peter Sellers.
For a long time, Mozart just couldn't get what he wanted to see on stage. We did a production that had Russell Thomas and Morris Robinson and Sean Panikkar, and really a beautiful cast. And we set it in a sweatshop in Queens. We worked with FreeTheSlaves.com, and every performance we had former slaves testify what they've been through right now in our lifetime, because slavery is a very real, real issue right now. So I wanted to contextualize that really, really deeply and set Mozart's anti-slavery music.
Anti-slavery? Joseph II was liberal, but he wasn't that liberal. Did abolish aspects of serfdom. He ushered in religious freedoms and opportunities. He talked about equality. He admired the democratic ideas espoused by the newly formed America, and his approach to governance embraced Enlightenment ideas, but to advocate for the liberation of enslaved Africans? Come on. What was more politically correct for that time was what made it to the stage instead of Zaid, an opera which depicted two European women who been captured and sold into an Islamic harem, Pasha Salim's harem. Pasha was Turkish, and he owned a few slaves. One was a nameless black man who was mute, doesn't utter a word. And the other enslaved man was seemingly of African descent, his name Asmin.
I had my dream. I wanted to be as good as I could be, and I didn't know where I would go.
Sir Willard White as Asmin.
And the Pasha saw me one day and liked my statue, liked what I stood for, liked the fact that I was strong but not challenging to him, but merely to defend myself. And fortunately, I was a eunuch. Fortunate for him. It was a situation that I had to give in to in order to fulfill my path in this world. Become a eunuch.
Hey, Alter, hörst du nicht? Ist hier das Bassa Selim Palast?
Sonder ich bei Monden scheine, Freunde, nehmt sie wohl in Acht. Oft auch star ein junges Herrchen, kehrt und lockt das kleine Märchen. Und dann träume gute Nacht, und dann träume gute Nacht.
The eunuch Asmin, along with the nameless black mute, was performed 40 times within the first decade of the opera's first performance.
Thank you. my favorite pastimes is to see somebody get lashed and flogged.
Baritone Nathan Stark as Pasha Salim.
Especially with Osman, he's a strong guy. So it's fun to see how much you can whip him until he actually cries out. I needed somebody who was a large person to keep away the other people who might be trying to invade my wives, and needed him to protect them against anybody who'd be foolish enough to try to sneak in.
Mozart put on stage regarding Osman's treatment was a reality for enslaved people throughout the West. In French, English, and Spanish colonies, that attitude expressed by Pasha was real, not merely a stage portrayal. There were codes that governed the institution of slavery. Unwritten laws in other places throughout the West weren't much different. Enslaved people were severely punished and killed for running away, talking back, striking back, gathering with other enslaved folks, and just learning to read or write. And by 1782, there were millions of Osmeans serving in the Caribbean islands, North and South America, as well as a few dozen right there in Vienna. We're producing this radio special because Mozart's opera isn't a museum piece. It's staged around the world, and the attitudes and ideas that were propagated in Western art and literature during that time still haunt us.
Osman, he's an idiot. He's loyal to a fault. He just needs to stay away from the women, though. He has a weak spot for women.
I find him terrifying, and I don't know how Blonda is able to put up with him.
Jennifer Welch Babbage as Constanza, one of the European women being held captive by Pasha Salim and guarded by Osman.
He's very boorish, and the way that he tries to woo me is just, oh, it's god awful. Of course, he is definitely trying to do. Every minute, he's trying to seduce or come on to me.
Soprano Jennifer Welch Babbage is Blonda, the English woman who was being guarded by Osman in Mozart's opera.
You know, if he wants to make advances on someone of my kind, of my station, then he must do so with kindness. He must treat me with respect. He must honor my feelings. It's not all about his feelings or who he thinks I should be as a woman. I am an independent person who deserves to be honored and valued, and this is not his thinking in the slightest.
Thank you.
I had to deal with Blonda quite a lot, and I grew to be fond of her. But, you know, in my opening song, when I talk about when you found a woman, you love her and cherish her and kiss her and never leave her alone.
Obviously, Pasha is the one who holds the upper hand here. And the one who has Pasha's ear is my lady Constanza. So, if Osmin goes too far, all I have to do is to tell my lady Constanza, and she will talk to Pasha, who will then set him straight.
The women were privileged people. I mean, one was a servant of the other, and the servant had a sort of similar position as myself, but in a different category. This is the failure of the human dream, always to be better than the next one. She came from a society that, because of her color, she had a certain privilege, and I, because of my color, I was less privileged, but had acquired some privilege in this enclave of the Pasha's realm.
In the opera, Blonda says to Osmin, "One word from me, and you'll have 50 of the best on the soles of your feet." In real life, that punishment was called bastinado. It's a form of punishment or torture that involves whipping the soles of a person's feet. Extremely painful because of the massive nerve endings in the soles. In the opera, Osmin threatens the European men with that form of torture, but he didn't have the authority to make it happen.
March, 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 rollt euch fort, sonst soll die Bastonade euch gleich zu Diensten stehen, euch gleich zu Diensten stehen.
Ein, das wird ja schwer, das wird nicht um zu uns zu gehen,
Kommt doch nicht hin,
weg von der Tür,
kommt doch nicht hin,
weg von der Tür,
so schlag ich frei, so schlag ich frei.
Ich sage drei,
ich sage drei,
ich sage drei,
This is Every Voice with Terrence McKnight on WQXR. It's a radio special that looks at the representations of blackness in Mozart's opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio.
The Abduction.
Abduction
from the Seraglio. Ich will.
Macht dich los, Irrenwahn.
Macht dich los, Irrenwahn.
This is Every Voice with Terrence McKnight on WQXR. It's a radio special that looks at the representations of blackness in Mozart's opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio.
The Abduction.
Abduction. Abduction.
Abduction from the Seraglio.
You guys know anything about opera?
No. My mom said opera.
The one that got the really good vocals and be like,
Could you do your version of opera?
Your impression.
I don't know how to,
It's best okay. impression. It don't matter what it sounds like.
No, that's good. That's good. No, I'm serious. That's good.
Would you ever go see an opera? Would you ever go see one opera?
Yeah. It depends.
If someone gave you a free ticket to go to the Metropolitan Opera, would you go?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you all listen to any classical music at all?
No, I don't listen to classical music. I listen to classical.
I listen to it with my mom.
You do? What kind of classical music do you listen to? What kind of stuff? Is this stuff with words in it? Is this stuff with just instruments in it?
Strings.
It's words? Strings.
I've been to the opera at the Met. It's glorious. Everybody should go once. I wish more people would go. I know it's expensive to go, and it would be cool if there was a way that was less expensive for more people in the community to be able to get to opera. But like, hey, lots of times it is not in English and it's hard to understand what's happening, but the Met has these cool little things where they translate it for you on the seat in front of you so you could follow along. And always the performances are gorgeous and the sets are gorgeous and the costumes are gorgeous and all the people who work there do really hard work. And like, it's worth going just to appreciate that. So even if you can't follow the story, the music's beautiful and everything else you're watching is beautiful, so everyone should go to the Met.
This radio special is derived from a 16-part podcast we produced on the topic of representations of blackness in opera. Being so heavily involved in classical music, I wanted to find a way of enjoying the art form in the same way as the opera enthusiast we just heard from. It's difficult when the person on stage that most resembles the person you see in the mirror each morning is the mute in the opera, the buffoon, the slave, the vixen, the deplorable one in the opera. So since abduction was politically correct and socially acceptable for 18th century Viennese audiences and beyond, how about we keep that idea in our own time? And when political correctness is so hotly contested, how about we go for socially acceptable or just doing the right thing? As of late, the largest classical music institution in our country has been making some moves. The Metropolitan Opera House has revamped some of its offerings that should embrace more of our diverse communities. This is something that Peter Sellers, the opera and theater director, loves talking about.
It's abnormal that a repertoire is made out of pieces from the past. Normally, Verdi and Mozart, there were only contemporary operas. So the only solution to what we're talking about is that all opera has to be contemporary again. And every once in a while you do an old piece, sure. But no, it's about now, it's made by now, it sounds like now, it moves like now, it talks like now, it's now. And that's not just the future, that's the present. Classical music got stuck because in 1925, who sold the most records in the world is Bessie Smith and Louis Armstrong, 1925. Now, why won't those people invite to the Metropolitan Opera House? Excuse me. And why did we say that Stravinsky and Schoenberg are the only important composers when Bessie Smith is alive? What are you talking about? There's a historical backlash. Opera lost it big time and didn't just freeze those two people out, froze composers out of the opera house for two generations. So opera has a lot of catch up to do, and catching up means new pieces. Catching up means let's hear it now, and let's hear it with all the power and beauty and vision that opera is capable of, and let's not just go try to fix the past, let's actually address the present in real terms.
This is Every Voice with Terrence McKnight on WQXR. It's a radio special that looks at the representations of blackness in Mozart's opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio. I grew up playing trumpet and piano, and at some point early in my studies, the symphony orchestra came into focus. We'd go hear the orchestra in elementary school. But the only man who looked like anybody in my family sat towards the back of the orchestra in the string section. Now, here's the thing. Those environments, those orchestras, they're part of our education system. So what do our kids take away from these experiences when they don't get to see representations of themselves? Or they only see representations of themselves? What does that say about the beautiful diversity of their classrooms?
Do you all listen to any classical music at all?
No, I don't listen to classical music. I listen to
with my mom.
You do? What kind of classical music do you listen to? What kind of stuff? Is it stuff with words in it? Is it stuff with just instruments in it?
It's strings.
Strings, orchestra. Do you all play any instruments?
No, I just dance.
You just dance?
Yeah.
Okay, what kind of dance do you do?
I do African, ballet, jazz, hip-hop, majorette.
Do you know that some operas have ballet in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We gotta do something about that. I got another question. All right, so you said I try to make that experience feel more like an American experience. And for a lot of African-American musicians, that experience involves church. It's where I first started playing music, and it's something that I have in common with some of the singers who took part in this series.
My mom and dad were both musicians in the church. My mom, she carried the choirs and played piano. My father played guitar and drums and bass, and so we sang and did music in our home and in church. That's what I knew growing up.
My dad was a preacher. Yeah, I was a PK. And so we grew up in the church.
You know, I sing and love Abyssinian Baptist Church.
I grew up in Beulah Baptist Church in Vine City.
We sang in the choir, children's choir, and as we got older in the teen and adult choirs, and I sang solos as a youngster, which is how I learned that I could sing in church in the Sunshine Band, as they called it.
When I first started to study music, I felt it was so compartmentalized that this is gospel. This is classical music, and this is what you have to leave to study classical music. I feel, on the contrary, is you bring your full musical experience with anything you do as you grow as a musician and as an artist.
It is Götterbild, mein Herz mit neuer Regung füllt.
I feel I was informed brilliantly as in the music world in the Pentecostal church, how I grew up in Alabama as a Southern black man. I always thank my mother for the training that we had in church. There was discipline there. So that set my sort of my discipline up to receive and to have the exchange of presentation.
It wasn't until after I had gone off to college that I started incorporating it into the music I would sing in church. I think partially that was because I knew most people wouldn't quite get it because it wasn't something that they were used to hearing.
La fatal pietra sovra me si chiuse. Ecco la tomba mia. Del di la luce più non vedrò, non rivedrò più Aida.
It wasn't a style that they were used to hearing in the Pentecostal church.
Aida.
And it was more of just, as I began to learn more about my own self vocally and musically, I was able to better incorporate the classical style into gospel music and to use my classical technique to enhance the gospel singing.
You know who else might have something interesting to say about the direction of opera? As someone who's been silent for the past 250 years. As we wrap up this episode, I want to go back to a character that we really haven't discussed. A character in Mozart's Abduction from the Seraglio. He's described as a slave. A black mute. He didn't say a word. He was the silent witness in this opera. He witnessed everything. The violence, the cruelty, the kindness, the empathy, the notions of who deserves to be free and who doesn't.
Seid ihr in seinen Diensten, Freund?
Hey.
Seid ihr in seinen Diensten, Freund?
Hey.
Seid ihr in seinen Diensten, Freund?
Ich bin in seinen Diensten, Freund.
Wie kann ich denn Pedril wohl sprechen, der hier in seinen Diensten steht?
Den Schurken, den der Hals soll brechen.
Seht selber zu,
seht selber zu. Wenn's anders geht, seht selber zu.
Wenn's anders geht,
was für ein alter, grober Bengel.
Das ist doch so ein Wattenschwell.
Was für ein alter, grober Bengel.
Das ist so ein
grober Bengel. Ihr irrt. Es ist ein braver.
So brav, so brav, so brav.
Das an.
Well, I bet he has something to say. During his lifetime, Mozart was associated with at least two black men. And perhaps Mozart wanted us to see this character, this mute, minus all the centuries of demeaning racist stereotypes that were so popular in Western thought, art, literature, and pseudoscience. Maybe Mozart wanted us to take a look at opera through the eyes of this mute. And when we do that, we might all start to see and hear his voice. And the many voices of humanity that go unheard. And when we do that, what we hear is every voice.
Die Bastonade, noch hat ihr
Zeit, noch hat er Zeit.
Ein Zweifel ist ein Versinnen, fällt ein Betragen auf meine Frage. Sag doch Bescheid, sag doch Bescheid.
Und
I'm Terrence McKnight. Thanks for being with us on this journey. We've got a lot of folks to thank as we wrap up. Uzi Brown Jr., Lemmy Pulliam, Peter Sellers, Rand Bryce Davis, Thomas Hampson, Kevin Maynor, Alicia Taylor, Dr. Melvin Foster, and Jennifer Welch Babbage. Dr. Sharon Willis, Nathan Stark, Sir Willard White, Mary Beth Diggle.
Do you have any more?
Now, don't drink too much or it'll go to your head.
Oh, don't worry about me. I'm as sober as can be. But remember, little brother, don't you give me away.
I better get him out of here. All right, little brother, time to go to sleep.
To sleep? But it's still early.
Come on, come on. We don't want the Pasha to surprise us.
Oh, no, not the Pasha. Good night, little brother. Good night.
And also thanks to my colleague, Nemet Habachi. Oh, so many folks. Sylvia McNair.
When we're talking about race in opera, you know, they say that sunshine is the best disinfectant possible. We are pulling these issues out from the shadows. We're taking them out from underneath the rug where they've kind of been buried, hidden. We need to bring this out into the light. Look at it. Talk about it. Which is what you're doing.
Thanks to our artist, Aaron K. Robinson, who did the illustration for the show, Theodora Kuslin, and everybody, the whole team at WQXR New York Public Radio, who made the show possible. And a huge thanks to the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts. You know, that's where our tax dollars go. I gotta thank my good friend Harry Belafonte, the late Belafonte, whose life and career inspired so much of the work that I did. I always thought, man, what if Belafonte is listening to my show? I gotta get it right. And of course, Thanks to you for listening. Every Voice with Terrence McKnight was written and produced by Terrence McKnight, David Norville, and Tony Phillips. Our research team includes Arielle Elizabeth Davis, Pranati Diwakar, Ian George, and Jazz Ogiest. This episode's sound design and engineering was by Alan Gofinski. Our original music is composed by Brother Jeremy Thomas, featuring Dr. Ashley Jackson on harp and Brother Titos Sampa on percussion and vocals. Our project manager is Natalia Ramirez, and our executive producer is Tony Phillips. The executive producer for WQXR Podcast is Elizabeth Nonamaker, and Ed Yim is the chief content officer at WQXR. This project is supported in part by the National Endowment for the Arts. You can find more information on the web at arts.gov. Thanks to the Met Archives for invaluable research data. And a huge amount of gratitude to Livermore Valley Opera for sharing their performance. If you enjoyed this episode, please take time to rate it. Rate us, review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I'm Terrence McKnight. I'll see you next time.
You're listening to Every Voice with Terrence McKnight.